Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Now, you would have heard Paddy Halpin yesterday, if you were listening. Paddy contacted us basically to say he suffered from depression and anxiety for nearly four decades. But he found the lockdown and the fact that everyone else was locked down very helpful. And he's actually, as he said, he's calmer than he was and he's less anxious. He got into work around the house and out in the back garden, and knowing that everyone was in the same predicament, so to speak, actually helped him. I suppose the word is diluted his depression and anxiety. And he sounded very well yesterday. Now, Marie has contacted us on foot of what Paddy said. Marie, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You connected with Paddy. Why?
Absolutely. Well, I've suffered with chronic anxiety and agoraphobia for the last 7 years. Basically, I've been housebound for 7 years. And the minute Joe said he felt calmer, Paddy said he felt calmer, I just said to myself, that's me. I felt so much calmer when everybody was in lockdown. It was like I felt normal because everybody was the same as me. And the pressure to try and go out was lifted off me.
Okay, good point.
That's all I can say. And now that everything is opening up again, the pressure is back on me. And when I heard Paddy yesterday, and he went on to say he was 40 years suffering from anxiety, I felt I had to reach out and try and get help for myself, and if there's other people suffering as well.
It's a fair while since we spoke about agoraphobia on Liveline. Will you just explain how it shows itself, Marie, in your life?
Basically, it's panic attacks and chronic anxiety. And the more away from your home you go, the more anxious and the more panicky you get. I stay in a 2 mile radius of my house.
Okay.
And even at that, Joe, I can get chronic anxiety.
And you find it difficult to leave the house?
I can't leave the house. I leave at the house to maybe go to the local coffee shop. But even having a cup of coffee, I'm still anxious. I'm waiting for the panic attack to show up. I'm waiting for the symptoms to come. And I want to get home.
So when you see people, and this is the world we live in, but when you see people saying, I can't wait to get out, queuing at midnight to get to the hairdressers or the barbers, or doing cartwheels down Grafton Street because they're enjoying being out, what is your reaction to that, Marie?
My reaction to that is it fills me with dread. And it just makes me so, so sad that I'm not delighted to get my hair done. I'm not delighted to go to a restaurant. I'm not delighted to go shopping. I haven't been in a clothes shop for 7 years, Joe. I haven't been able to. My independence is gone.
Yeah.
And it fills me with dread. And I look in Facebook and I've been watching TV and they've been interviewing people and they're delighted. Everything's up and running and holidays and, you know, and it just fills me with dread.
And what is your understanding, Marie, of why your agoraphobia develops so severely?
I don't actually, believe it or not, I don't know. I went to a psychiatrist at the start just to get an assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, it felt I woke up one morning and it was there. But
this fear of going outside.
Yes. But she explained to me it's like little stones, stepping stones and little stresses. And just one morning you wake and that stress turns into you fall off the cliff. They just become too much. And within about 4 to 6 weeks, I was totally housebound.
And did anything trigger this?
I can't figure anything triggering it. I mean, I had been through, when I was younger in school, I had suffered from panic attacks. But when I left school, I had 25 years of holidays, I drove, I was independent. You know, I loved life. I'm an extrovert type person.
But in terms of your, for example, your work life or your ability to make an income,
I don't. I'm on disability benefit.
Yeah.
Because I actually, you know, I can't go out. You go to your doctor and you're given tablets. You know.
What are they for, anxiety? Or?
They're for anxiety tablets. Yeah. Basically, Joe, it's a cocktail of uppers and downers.
Okay.
You know, and I think the side effects sometimes are worse than what you're going through. I've been to psychiatrists, I've been to psychotherapists, psychologists, and nothing has worked for me. And I think when I heard Paddy saying he's suffered for the last 40 years, it just made me, you know, oh my God, I just said I can't do this for 40 years.
And what is it? Can I ask you your daily routine?
I try and keep a routine. I do.
Great. Okay.
I do get up between 9 and 9:30 in the morning, have my breakfast, shower. I do some housework. I live with my mum, so I do some housework. I do take a nap every day from 1:30 to about 3:30.
Okay.
I get up.
That's a good time.
Yeah.
I love to do it myself someday.
Exactly. Well, I find it. I'm very fatigued. I get very tired easily.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I get up. It's a cup of tea, a biscuit, and then dinner time. So then I might look at a movie upstairs in my bedroom on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I go to sleep again for 10:30, and that's my day.
Okay.
And you know, I just felt, when I heard Paddy, I got a lump in my throat. You know, I just felt, my God, you know, I felt selfish for saying I felt calmer when everybody was in.
Yeah.
But I did. And then when he went on to say 40 years, I said, I can't do that.
You felt calmer. You tell me, but from what you're saying, you felt calmer because there was no pressure on you to go out because no one was out.
There's no one out, yeah. And and everybody was normal like me. I felt normal.
Yeah,
I felt normal. And, you know, it was just, there was just a quietness around.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, my anxiety calmed down completely.
And do you know anyone else who suffers from agoraphobia?
My mum would have suffered when I was younger, Joe. I wouldn't have understood why she wasn't going out, because I was too young. But there was a lot of, the life I've had is a lot to fit into, you know, a couple of minutes. But she would have had a lot of stresses in her life. And so she suffers from it, but not to the extent I do.
And Marie, funny question. Do you want to go back out?
You know, Joe, I want my life back so much. I want to do the things I loved. I want to do, but at the other end is the fear. The fear of, oh my God, I'm going to faint. Oh my God, I'm going to pass out. You know, I'm going to die, because that's the way you feel. That's literally the way you feel. You just want to get up and run.
And where would you like to go?
Even just a simple cup of coffee in the city centre.
Yeah.
I would love to browse a shop. On my own, buy my own clothes, nothing fancy. Just do the simple things in life that everybody takes for granted.
And that you were doing.
That I was doing, yes. Yeah, that I was doing. You know, I gave up driving.
By your voice, I don't know what age you are, you sound very young.
Well, I'm mid-40s.
Yeah, okay, that's young.
Well, yeah, it's young and 7 years, so, you know... So I still feel young. I when I've heard 40, I kind of nearly flipped out. I said, you know, I don't want 40 years, the next 40 years to go by and look back and say, maybe I did nothing about it. You know, maybe there's other people out there suffering like this. I don't know. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of help, Joe, you know.
There isn't a lot of help.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of help. No. I mean, you know, I've read up on books. I'm now
thinking online, because that's where obviously people who suffer from agoraphobia can't meet, obviously, because that's ignoring their condition, or they can't go out. But with Zoom and the new world we live in, is there any groups online? that support each other?
There's some groups in Facebook, but you'll find you go in and everybody talks about their anxiety symptoms.
Mm.
And sometimes that's not good because you come away from it and you go, oh, my God, I have that, I have this.
Okay.
So that's really all that's there.
And there's who prescribed the anxiety medication?
Would have been the psychiatrist I went to first.
Oh, the psychiatrist, okay.
Yeah.
And did that psychiatrist say anything about the future insofar as?
No. There was nothing more she could do. She put me on to a psychotherapist, but that didn't work out. It just didn't help me, the CBT, the cognitive behaviour therapy. It didn't seem to work out.
Okay.
And, you know, at this stage, I feel I'm not going to get well. You know, there's nights I go to bed and I just pray that I just won't wake up because I'm just tired from it. You're living with it 24/7. You're living with this.
And it's part of that suite of illnesses, mental distress, which will tell you can't do anything about me, like depression tells you. Your broken arm, you know immediately to go to an A&E because that's the only way the healing will start.
Yes.
But it will start.
Yes.
But depression and agoraphobia, so powerful and such a devious, distressing illness that tells you can't do anything about me.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people will see a physical problem like a broken arm and they'll say, oh, God, love you, you've a broke, but they never see what's going on inside. You know, I'm sure when I sit down and I have a cup of coffee, if I get there, which was 2 weeks ago now, again, I got to my local coffee shop, which is 5 minutes away. I'm sure when people look at me, they say there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
You know, I look fine. I look, you know, but inside I'm churning. And I might have had to take 2 relaxing tablets to get there.
Right. And is there a protocol you use when you go to that? Do you go with certain people?
I do.
Okay.
I usually go with my sister and her partner because trust is a very big issue with this as well. Joe, you really have to trust the person you go with. And you really have to know you can say to them, oh, my God, I'm feeling really wobbly. I have to go home.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So it's just an ongoing thing, you know. And as I said, when I heard Paddy yesterday, it just resonated so much, you know.
And when you got your first panic attack, how did that show itself? Was that just you tell me?
Very, I got very faint, very dizzy, clammy, couldn't breathe, and just wanted to get out.
And where did this happen?
It happened in the city centre.
Okay.
In a crowded area,
So you had to... But once you got home, that was the end of the panic attack.
That was the end of it.
But you had to get home.
Yeah, I had to get home.
Okay. All right, okay.
You know, once you get in the door, it dies down. But after...
And what do you do? It just struck me, given all the talk the last few months about hairdressers. What do you do about the doctor, the dentist, the hairdresser?
Well, they're all... Thank God, Joe, they're all about 5-10 minutes away from me.
Right.
So they're all local. I mean, I've been going to my hairdresser over 25 years and he still doesn't know I suffer with this.
Okay.
It's you feel ashamed.
Yeah.
You know, you feel ashamed to see.
It's another glimpse. And people have recovered. Lots of people have recovered from agoraphobia and indeed anxiety and chronic anxiety. But anyway, it's important that we hear from them. That's what you need. That's what you need to hear, Marie.
Absolutely.
All you're hearing at the moment in your head from your agoraphobia and your anxiety is the case for the prosecution.
Oh, absolutely.
But we need to hear from the case for the defence because you can't hear it. You can't.
No.
Because that's the nature of the illness. Okay, Marie, kind regards to you and your family.
Thanks again. For taking my call, Joe.
Thanks for making the call. 51551 Marshall.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Don't worry, those regulars on the listen to the programme the last 10 days, we will have our daily Dublin Mint section and it gets more and more jaw-dropping, including, believe it or not, a statement from a man who has 47 previous convictions, 4 attempts on his life, has been shot at 17 times in all, has been kidnapped by the IRA, and this man is called Martin Foley, and he runs a legitimate debt collection agency called Viper Debt Collection, and he was mentioned on yesterday's programme. And he submitted a statement to us. He said, I've never worked for the Dublin Mint office and I would never work for them, given what I've heard about them on Liveline. Anyway, take that in. Maureen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good to speak to you.
Likewise, good to hear from you. Your daughter is a nurse on the front line, so that immediately, I hope she's well and thanks for her service. But something happened to her, which is insulting, to say the least.
Well, apart from it being insulting, I suppose, Joe, it's the fact that it seems to be a flawed policy. It was our biggest issue with it. She made an appointment to go to the hairdresser last week, along with many of us, delighted to get her appointment for today, which is her day off after nights. Mm-hmm. And yesterday evening, they rang her and asked a set of questions. Now, she had only just woken up from the previous night, so okay. She was a bit not with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they said, have you been in contact with anyone with COVID? She said no. And then she woke up a bit later on and said, oh, gosh, hold on a minute. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. And mm-hmm. herself and the pals on the WhatsApp group, she said, should I say, should I not? And they said, oh, maybe you should. Maybe somebody in their hairdressers has an immunocompromised condition or something.
Yeah.
So she rang them back and she said, listen, I am actually a nurse. I work in an emergency department. So I have had contact in my job over the last few months with people who have had COVID. And they said, oh, well, then we'll have to cancel your appointment.
Yeah.
And she obviously was very disappointed. She tried to say, but we haven't had any confirmed cases in the last while.
Yeah.
But I'll wear my mask. I always wear my mask. But I'll wear gloves. But I am well. And the girl on the phone said, well, it's the policy. I'm sorry, we'll have to cancel.
It's a blanket policy.
Well, there was no explanation. I mean, even my daughter said to me, if they had said, well, actually, we have some staff here who we have to be extra cautious of, she would have been disappointed but understood it to some extent. But it was just, it's the policy. So I had the upset young nurse. This is a nurse who's, she's only qualified a year, so she's a young nurse who's been redeployed into an emergency department in the middle of a pandemic. Very difficult. And I had the upset, I suppose, of that, as she set out to go on another night of night duty last night, with the disappointment of, and I can't even do the things that other people are going to get to do in the new normal, whatever that is. I mean, this is so unfair. So later, so my instinct was, well, I'll have to ring Joe. And her instinct probably was, I'm going to put it up on Twitter. But, you know, she didn't. Later the same evening, they rang back and they said, thank you for your service on the front line, but it's still the policy. And, you know, she feels, I suppose, well, there's no point in thanking me for my service on the front line if I can't even get my hair cut. And they did say they'd look into it and maybe they'd get back to her about it today. But today is the day she was to have the haircut and looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, the good friends on the WhatsApp managed to find a place that would take an appointment. And so she is getting the hair done in a different salon. But Joe, the policy makes no sense. If you take it to its conclusion, everybody on the front line won't be able to get their hair cut until the pandemic is gone. Because how many of them can actually say that they haven't been in contact with the person who has had COVID? There was no timeline on this. It was just, have you been in contact with? So the ambulance service, the people in the hospitals, they have all been in contact with somebody who's had COVID.
Countless thousands.
Yeah. I mean, the porters, the cleaners, you name it, they've all, you know, they can't answer that question. And can any of us? I mean, do I know that I haven't been in contact with somebody who has had COVID? Yeah. There are asymptomatic people. Maybe I am asymptomatic. So it's a very blunt instrument, that question. Very, very blunt instrument. And she outmaneuvered herself, if you like, by being extra conscientious and extra honest, by ringing them back herself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just when people make a policy, they need to think, what are the ramifications here of this policy? And is this policy a sensible policy? Does it make sense? Is it implementable? Does it have unforeseen consequences? I mean, I just thought that it's not a policy that makes sense, because I probably can't even say I haven't been in contact with somebody who has had COVID. Maybe I have.
Yeah. And they didn't offer any, they didn't say, actually, next Sunday morning between 8 and 12, we're only going to do frontline workers.
No, yeah. No. And actually, Joe, that did occur to me. When I thought about it, I was a very cross mammy initially. Mm. And I actually thought, you know, I'm looking forward to getting my hair done here locally in my own salon on Saturday. But actually, the people who have been working flat out on very long hours under awful pressure for the last few months, surely they are looking forward to it even more than you and I and other people around us. It's even, I suppose, for her, it's an even nicer little treat to be able to go and do it. And the pals had to, they were going to go out and have a little bite to eat tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So, you know, have your hair done and be doing the normal things. And she has, all through the pandemic, been so careful about her, you know, her family, hasn't seen her friends, you know, all the usual things. And in a way, maybe salons could have set a couple of days apart at the very beginning for those who are like the rest of us, want their hair done, but have actually maybe worked extra hard throughout as well.
Okay, Maureen. It's, by the way, was that a regular hairdresser, a regular salon she goes
yes.
to?
Yes. A salon in town, in the city centre, yes.
Won't she be going again?
No, okay, I don't think so. Now, they may well get back. She's still asleep after last night's night duty. Sure. They may well get back to her. But really, it caused an awful lot of upset on the day.
Okay.
And if she'd been asked the questions at the time of booking, maybe it all could have been avoided. But it was, you know, less than 24 hours ahead.
Yeah.
This was the approach.
And they initiated the contact, didn't they?
Yes, they rang her yesterday. And they initiated, and she initiated the ringing them back.
Yeah, fair play to her from that.
Which was the right thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay.
I think the policy needs to be maybe thought about a little bit.
Okay.
And,
you
know, just for, so it doesn't happen to others, I suppose.
All right, thanks, Maureen, and kind regards to your daughter and her colleagues. That's Maureen. And Maria is on now. Maria, good afternoon. You've just come from a visit with your mother in a nursing home. Is this the first visit you've had in a while?
Oh, Joe, yeah. It's the first visit in 4 months.
4 months.
And I'm a bit the worst for wear as a result of it. Just the inhuman setup that they now have. And I understand the protection. So, like, you now go into a nursing home, you have to book time with your loved one in advance. It's a 15-minute slot.
Mm-hmm.
You're sent through a different entrance and kind of interrogates your number taken, you know, your temperature taken. I understand all that. You know, the mask I was bringing with me wasn't, they asked me to use one of theirs instead. Then you have to go into disinfectant in your shoes, like through the foot and mouth disease. And then you walk into this room and she's there, and yet there's a huge plastic screen between you and her, and a distance that just feels like miles. But so I suppose, but that's bad enough. Now, my mum has a dementia, like many of the other 30,000 citizens who are living in nursing homes, in residential care. I suppose I'm wearing a mask. So in addition to dementia, she also has Parkinson's. So her voice is incredibly weak. It's really hard to hear at the best of times.
Yeah.
So she can't even lip read what I'm trying to say, and I can't hear her. But worse, there's another family, and I'm not begrudging them that at all. They're behind a half screen.
Mm-hmm.
Two people talking to their loved one loudly, right? And while it's a joy to hear, it just completely muted me. And I was sitting there, and I was just absolutely speechless. I just didn't know. I was completely rendered speechless. I didn't know what to say to Mum. I didn't know how to get over because I couldn't talk over them. And I didn't want to cry in front of her because here I haven't seen her in 4 months. Have you explained to someone with dementia that, you know, the reasons for your absence? And I'm wondering, is it possible for us to have a conversation? And by us, I mean me and my family members and other family members who might feel similarly, a conversation with the nursing home owners, who at the end of the day are in this business for profit, you know, and to see if we could adopt what Professor Ivor Brown's kind of view on this whole situation that we're all finding ourselves in, and that making that choice to cocoon or to live. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, because the nursing home staff get to go home and leave the building. They commute on public transport. They'll be eating out in restaurants and dining in bars. Yeah, that's what we have to do now as well. And, you know, there is a possibility that they may pick up COVID in any one of those places and bring it into the nursing home in as much a chance as any of the loved ones, the family members might. So is there a possibility to ask which you would prefer for your loved one, if you're speaking on behalf of your loved one, if your loved one no longer has that voice? And is there a way of subdividing the nursing homes into those that want a cocoon and then those that might prefer to choose more interaction with their loved ones? So a quality of life over length of life.
Which is the point made by Professor Ivor Brown to Niamh Horan, the Sunday Independent. What he said, I'm over 90. Though I saw him recently walking through a park. He looked absolutely fantastic. I think he was with his son. He wouldn't know me now, but he looked really well because he's such an eminent visage anyway. But he basically said, I want to make my own choice. I've been here long enough in one sense. But the difference for the difficulty for the nursing home is the other residents, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you ask the family members, or indeed the residents that can speak for themselves, which they would prefer, and could you subdivide, or maybe you divvy up the nursing homes so that in one nursing home they are going to let family members in to spend time with their loved ones. And then if you choose, so that you get a choice, we've had absolutely no...
But in that situation, Maria, and it is an awful situation, in that situation, would you not need 100% agreement from every family?
You would, but there's no communication with the families is what I'm saying. We've not been asked. I've asked this question already, and I've been told that, you know, COVID. Computer says no. Now, you know, my mum's she's a retired teacher. She contributed to society all through her life. She's enriched people's lives.
Yeah.
She's paid those horrible taxes in the 80s and interest rates. And because of just lady luck, you know, she's lived healthily all her life. And as I was leaving her, and I was actually utterly speechless. I couldn't talk and I couldn't explain why I couldn't talk. And I just felt utterly impotent in the situation.
Now, does your mother know that you're there?
I don't know, because I couldn't hear her. I actually couldn't hear her through
the screen.
There was so much ambient noise.
Other noise around you. And did you say this to anyone in the nursing home?
I didn't, because I was actually in such tears saving, you know.
You what? Sorry, Maria?
I was in floods of tears.
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry.
I left my jacket behind because I was just moithered. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the whole system, like when you come to the front door, I haven't seen the lady who's on the reception desk for 4 months. She didn't even say hello. She just said, other door. It's not prison, you know? Like, no family makes the choice to have to send a loved one into a nursing home. Likely, it is a horrific decision to have to make. And it is criminally unfair and inhuman.
And when are you allowed another visit?
I think next week only. And then in addition to all of that, we've been having Skype calls, which are better than nothing, do you know? But they're going to be stopped now because the nursing home says they can't manage the Skype calls as well as the physical, the physical calls. And yet, I understand the staffing issues, but we have offered to volunteer to do all of this as well, to help out, to row in. So something, there has to be some form of compromise that is just a little bit more human. You know, as a nation, we've always been a very caring nation, but I'm afraid we've always fallen short when it comes to our institutions and the reputations of looking after those that are in a vulnerable position. And this is the latest version of this.
Okay.
And I just wanted to know, does anyone else feel like me?
Okay, and what is the situation?
Yeah.
Are there better ways of doing
it? Can we do it differently? Can medical staff row in and offer suggestions, who'd be much better equipped to make those decisions and suggestions than I ever would?
Okay. It's a terrible situation, Maria. It really is. I'm so sorry that I know, and you know what you'll hear, and above all, we are sympathy to people who passed away during the pandemic. Nearly 1,800 people died, and their families. But there's so many. The domino effect of this pandemic is just. The dominoes haven't stopped falling yet by a long stretch. Maria, kind regards to you and your dear mother, who you obviously care for.
Thanks for taking the call, Joe.
Thanks for
really
making the call.
It.
And you mind yourself. 51551, wash your hands, please.